Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast. We're back for a New Year's special. So welcome to 2026. I hope you're enjoying your jetpacks and hoverboards.
We did do one a week ago. So you didn't mention the jetpacks or hoverboards then?
They're new.
Oh, right. Oh, everyone got them Christmas.
Yeah, everyone
right,
got okay, Christmas. Right. Yeah. My name is Tom Butler and joining me, as always, is Mr. Tom Wheatley.
Whoa. There's no clever...
What could I reference this year? What's a big cultural thing I could reference?
Probably nothing we want to talk about on the podcast. Yeah, I can't think of one thing that's happened this year.
This year? Or it's a bit early. It's just day one.
Yeah, nothing's happened this year.
And Mr. Brendan Duffy, welcome back.
Thank you.
We are here to... if you missed our Christmas special, go back and listen to that, which was about James Bond 26. We've had a few beers by this point.
Happy New Year.
We talked about Bond 26 then. We also talked about the year in Bond. But this episode, we are going to be casting our eye back over 2025. Remember that? It
was a long time ago.
Oh, 2025. Halcyon memories.
When we didn't have jetpacks and hoverboards. We're going to look at the best TV of the year, the best movies of the year. We're going to look ahead to 2026 and see what movies are coming down the line. And we'll also talk about Bond 26 again, sort of more about what we want to see, what we expect to see, who might play Bond, all that sort of stuff. And as is now tradition, a quiz from Mr. Brendan Duffy, the quiz master general. So I'm looking forward to testing
it. Yes, you look forward to this because you always win it. And as the years go on, I get worse and worse.
So let's have a look back over 2025. And first of all, let's talk about the TV of the year. Now, 2025 was a pretty good year for some returning big hitters. So I thought maybe we'd start there and talk about that. And then we can talk about some... returning shows that came back. And then we can talk about some of our new shows that maybe we got into over the year. So TV-wise, we had the return of, I'm going to start here, the set of Severance. Anyone watch this?
No.
I've never watched it.
Oh, no, hold on. I have watched it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't realise that was 2025. Good, I've watched it. Yeah.
Severance, which is the Apple TV programme with... from Ben Stiller and a bunch of other people, and that had been a big hit during, like, I feel like it was like lockdown maybe, that the first series was
it? I can't have been lockdown. Was it 2 years between them, series?
But yeah, there was a big delay because of various things, writer strikes and all sorts of stuff, but that show came back, and second series I thought was pretty good. What do you think?
I think the concept is really interesting. It's a concept show. The first one was fantastic. It was novel. It was interesting. It's fallen down the lost trap for me, I think, in the second season, where they're just opening up routes that they can go down. With the first season, it was very clean. By the end of it, you sort of solved most of the things that were going on. It was very neat. It was very nice. Second season, they started throwing in weird episodes, new concepts to it, so that the same thing they did with Lost. You want to make it as long as possible and throw as many things into the air to catch later on in the season. So I think I did like season two. There was one episode which was awful. You remember that one?
Yes. Is it the one with...
Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, Patricia Arquette, where she went to that town and it was like...
Yes.
Sat in a shop and talked
to... It was just off. And it sort of shows what they're trying to test things out so they can elongate it. Because every show wants to be 10 seasons, 8 seasons, doesn't it? I don't think that concept has 10 seasons in it. I think it should have been a neat 2 to 3 seasons.
If you haven't seen Severance, obviously it's like a sci-fi premise of people in work who go to work and they have their brains severed so that when they go into work, they have their own personality, their own lives. Mm. But when they leave work, they don't remember anything about work and they have their own completely separate lives. And I think what I liked about series 2 the most is how it explored the sort of underlying themes and tensions and the relationships that can build up within that and explored some of that some more. But I think I agree. I think it kind of, yeah, it's almost painting itself into a corner now where you want things to be explained, and the more they're explained, you're a bit like, oh, that's actually
well, the first season is based almost entirely in the office, which is great, works really well. It's simple, it's confining, it adds an element of intensity to it because you're in the same four walls all the time. Second season, they start moving out to other areas, but still they sit within the walls a lot. They can't do that every season. So what they're going to have to do is find a new place for them to go next time, like open it up a little bit to be a different location, because you can't have the same four walls every single season. It's going to be really boring. People won't watch it. But by doing that, you shift the concept quite a lot. They took them outside. They come into like the mountains in the second season. And by that point, you're like, well, hold on. This is not what I've signed up to. Now you're changing the show, potentially. So, yeah, I still think the second season was good. I just think it's going to be hard to extend that concept.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is it felt a lot of time it was very narratively like treading water in terms of not really moving things forward. But I did like some of it. I did think that I actually quite like that stuff in the forest and the woods there, and you're sort of exploring a little bit.
I think it'll
more
be a bit of a Westworld. Westworld fizzled out in after two seasons because the concept sort of didn't work anymore. And you're like, I sort of get them what you're doing now and don't care anymore. Yeah. I think they'll do that.
But yeah, that was Severance. I mean, trying to tie it back to James Bond. Is there any characters or people in that who think would work for James Bond?
What's the name of the guy who is like the guard? The one who does the dance?
Melchek.
He's hot property at the moment. I can see him being in a Bond, but I don't know nobody else.
Gwendolyn Christie, she was in it for a bit. I think she's got Bond vibes, I think.
Oh, the...
From Game of Thrones. She was Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones, I think. For like
No.
But the Bond henchman vibes, no?
No, that, too obvious. Although, thinking about it, I won't say any spoilers, but the therapist, she's quite interesting.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay.
She's an interesting actor.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Other big hitters that returned this year, and I want to get your take on it, was The Bear. Have you two watched The Bear?
No, because I didn't like the third season, I didn't bother.
So this is the Disney Plus Hulu show where set in a kitchen in Chicago. Fourth series, I didn't like series three either. I thought series three was very, like, almost like Severance as well, sort of treading water a lot. But I thought series four was more interesting. There was more development in it. But I do feel like that show has almost lost some steam, has come out of that one as well, and kind of feels like it's done a lot of its major plot points already. And we sort of know most of the things that we were hoping to get answered in series one. So, yeah.
I think that there is a show that had a lull and for me came back to form. Only Murders in the Building. I thought season four was very weak.
Interesting.
I thought season five, it was a return to just focusing on the three of them.
Right.
Going about their sleuthing.
Okay.
There were cameos, but they used them in the right amount. Christoph Waltz, isn't it?
So Bond alumni. There you go. Okay.
There's the connection. Renée Zellweger was in it as well.
Good work.
And so I think they could put it to bed now.
Yeah.
I think they could. They're not going to.
You know where it's going, season six?
But they always leave it with a cliffhanger.
It's coming to London.
So, is it coming to London?
It's going to be set in London.
Oh, that's good. Agatha Christie vibes. Okay.
So, if you aren't aware of Only Murders in the Building, how would you set it up?
There's two elderly gentlemen start a podcast with...
But who are they? Come on, that's the important part.
Oh, the actors?
Yeah.
Okay, Steve Martin.
Martin Short,
yeah.
Yeah.
Who are famed duo.
Yeah. They are gold together. Yeah. And I think the addition of Selena Gomez as the third wheel is quite a good way of doing it. I'm like you with The Bear. I didn't like series four. Never finished it, so I never watched any of season five yet. But it's interesting to hear that you think it's back on track.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. In terms of people from Only Murders in the Building that could be in Bond, I think Martin Short, I think we're long overdue Martin Short in a James Bond film.
He's going to buy Q.
Yeah.
Maybe a good Q.
Yeah. A villain or, I don't know. I feel like Martin Short in a Bond film is...
Martin Short works best when he plays a... foreign camp person
Father of the Bride.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. His best role. Yeah.
So
yeah.
If he's playing the Father of the Bride role in the James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah. So he should be doing. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Steve Martin would play a really good Bond villain that was obsessed with cleanliness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I can dig it.
See him doing that.
Okay. Yeah. One of the returning series that I want to talk about is White Lotus.
I did season one.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. Interesting.
An oh dear from me.
Go on.
Again, I just think it dangled a carrot episode by episode, and it just didn't reveal enough. And even when it got to the end, it was like, is that it?
Okay.
For me.
I think it did definitely peak with series two. I think the second series in Italy was the best. The one in Thailand, I liked it. I think I probably agree with you. I think the mystery wasn't as strong, and like the denouement, the ending wasn't quite there. But talking of Bond, Lisa from Blackpink was in White Lotus, and she was in the James Bond tribute.
Pretty tenuous.
Jason Isaacs, though, I think he'd be good in a Bond film.
Yeah, do you know what? I've just thought, is he not already it feels like someone who has already been in one, in a way.
He's very Toby Stevens mold, isn't he?
Yeah.
But no, I quite liked White Lotus. I'm looking forward to season four. That's going to be filming in the south of France. Apparently, rumours are that it's going to be around the Cannes Film Festival. And that's going to have a
Riviera.
Going to have a film festival vibe. I mean, that show is really heavily founded on who they get in it.
Yes.
And I'm sure they'll have an amazing cast again. So,
well, I think the great thing about that is if they have a weak season, it doesn't necessarily mean the following season is going to be, because it's a whole new cast, whole new setting.
One thing that will change in series four is the composer. The composer for the first three series of White Lotus has quit the series. So in series four, they're going to have a whole new composer, which I think the music on White Lotus is one of the key sort of cornerstones of what makes that show. Yeah. I am struggling to remember what the composer's name is. I might just Google it while we talk a little bit about that. But he had a big falling out with Mike White, who's the creator.
Yes.
I think one thing about White Lotus that I really like is that Mike White writes every single episode.
Mike White wrote White Lotus.
Yes.
Okay. Ned Schneebly, yeah.
Okay. Right.
Ned Schneebly. I really liked White Lotus season three. I think it's like reliable TV. Mm-hmm. And the composer for White Lotus is called Cristobal Tapia de Vere. And he doesn't like working with Mike White anymore, so he has stepped away from that. Actually, one more, which I didn't put on this list, a big returning show, was Slow Horses.
Oh, now we're talking. You know, my office is next to Slow Horses building.
Barbican.
Barbican. I've sent you pictures, haven't you? As soon as I walk out my front door, I'm there. I'm at that Italian restaurant.
I think that's one of the best things about what Slow Horses is, how London-centric it is, but it's also like London in the London that we know from living there.
Yes.
It's like Whitechapel.
It's not Bourne Identity.
It's London, not, it's not Westminster.
It's, I mean, there are off-licenses. It's
Exactly.
Curry houses, yeah.
What did you think of season five?
I haven't seen it. Is that the one that came out two months ago? I haven't watched it yet.
It came out earlier this year. I mean, earlier last year. Yeah, but yeah.
I don't watch. I really like Slow Horses. I like having all of them ready to go. I don't want to watch
it. It's all out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I personally think I think Slow Horses peaked with season three.
Yeah.
Which is the one where they go. You've not seen it?
I think we spoke about this last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the one where they go into the archives of the Slow Horses archives, and there's this huge like bunker, like besieged. Yeah. I think that's the best one.
Yeah.
Season four was pretty good. Season five is much lower stakes, lower key, centered around Roddy and him having a girlfriend. And this,
I think that's a response to there was a risk with that show that it started as a gritty, lowish budget show, which was about the characters, and then it developed. It was getting too far the other way, and it was turning into Mission Impossible, which wasn't the point. So Horses are meant to be the worst of the worst, and they're like saving the world.
Yeah.
And they've probably gone, we can't go any further down that route because we're basically making them the best spies in the world, and why they're Slow Horses. So they've gone there. I haven't seen it, I think it. I worry about its longevity because I think it's turning into like a Prime Suspect type show. If you've got so many seasons of it, there's only so long you can follow those characters.
Yeah, I think one thing I like about Slow Horses is how regular it is, which is quite rare.
That's
now.
Good, yeah.
Well, what's quite interesting is most of the shows we've mentioned now, just now, were White Lotus, and what was the other one? The Bear, Only Murders. They come back every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's quite consistent. Rare nowadays. I say it's quite rare. There's quite a lot there. But Slow Horses, the way they've done it, they're based on these Mick Herron books. They film the series back to back.
Yeah.
Characters can all stay together. You can think about Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Which, if you're listening to this on New Year's Day, I think the final episode is out today, maybe. But that series is dragged on and on and on and on. Yeah. The interest just dissipates, doesn't it, I think?
It depends how you... There is a lot to be said for consistency, knowing that every year you get to watch these things. But you don't want it to turn into a drama series. You want to keep it as a high level exciting thing. It's a difficult line to tread, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, look at Stranger Things. Stranger Things is very much a full on marketable event. Slow Horses sits in the middle. Like, people are excited about it, but it's also, if that came out 20 years ago, it would have been Sunday night ITV drama, which is would have been done very well.
ITV couldn't afford it though, could they? With Gary Oldman and Jack Loudon and.
Well, it would have been an ITV version of it, but. Similar sort of scenario.
Yeah. I love Slow Horses. I can't wait for the sixth series. I thought the fifth series was pretty good.
Great cast. Everyone's an anti-hero.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah. And yeah, everyone's got their faults and whatnot. You really have to get into it.
Okay.
And, you're not a fan of it.
I'm disappointed. I mean, there were the big returning shows that I wanted to mention. There is one other show which I don't know if you've watched or not, but returned this year, which is Platonic on Apple.
No.
Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne, and it's like a buddy comedy.
Okay.
They're like platonic best friends. The second series came out. It's really funny. It's really worth watching. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to highlight that as a great, funny comedy show, half hour long, well worth watching if you're into that sort of thing. What are the TV shows?
What, returning?
Oh, no, any TV show.
Returning ones, I've got one which is a bit of a... I actually think it's really good, but it's not. I wouldn't say it's like up there with Slow Horses, but Star Trek: Strange New Worlds.
Okay,
you watched that?
I haven't. No.
So I've not watched all of it. I just started watching it because I tend to wait until it's finished and then I'll pay for. I don't like it enough to watch it every single week and pay for 3 months of Paramount, but I wait for it all to do it. But if you look at Star Trek over the past 15 years or 20 years, you used to have Next Generation, incredible, different episodes each time. You didn't have to follow the story. Star Trek, what was the Netflix one? Star Trek, about 8 years ago, they did Star Trek.
It wasn't even that long ago. It's called...
Discovery.
Discovery, yes.
So that is very much an arc. You start and you follow the whole story to the end. Doesn't work with Star Trek.
Which was different for Star Trek, right? Because Star Trek up to that point was always story of the week, move on. There were arcs throughout the series.
Fun. They could do an episode that was comedy. They could do an episode that was drama. They could do an episode that was horror.
Discovery changed that, didn't it? And made it more of a, you had to cliffhanger.
Didn't work. And it's got its audience, but I think for people who like Strange Worlds is a return to the Next Generation.
Right, okay.
Every episode is different. They'll have one that's about singing, and they'll have one about a funny one. But I think it is fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's a great cast.
Okay.
Very funny. They've got really good, you know, they know the lore.
It's set before the original series.
Captain Pike.
Right, so Captain Pike is the one that hands over.
Kirk's in it, but he's a young Kirk. But it is enjoyable. It's well worth watching. If you like Star Trek, you'll really like it. If you don't like Star Trek, you probably won't like it.
Okay, good. Anything else?
Well, you talked about Seth Rogen there, the studio.
Fantastic. Wow. This is on. It sounds like it's on all of our lists. Yeah. I would say this is probably the best new TV show.
Yes, I would say that
easily.
Yeah.
What is it about?
Well, Seth Rogen plays I think he's like an assistant exec, isn't he? And then he gets the role of the full, like the top exec at a studio.
A
Hollywood studio. And he is a torn character because he loves movies. He's obsessed with movies. He wants to make great movies. He's constantly, everyone he's involved with, like Ron Howard and people, he's obsessed with them. He wants to do anything they want because he loves movies. But he's an exec, so he's torn all the time because he's driven by money. And the whole premise is that every episode, something happens where he's forced to do something, which he really goes against anything that he wants to do. And the episodes are so creative in how they're done. They're all different. They do a first person one shot episode. I think that's probably the one everyone remembers. They do the... I mean, I think for me, the most interesting concept is the Scorsese episode.
Yes.
Where Scorsese wants to make a film about the Jamestown Massacre. And he's meant to make a film about Kool-Aid.
Yes, because the Kool-Aid is the drink that they drink in the Jamestown Massacre.
He basically sits in this netherworld, is trying to make everyone happy. He basically says to Scorsese, I like it, we want it, we're going to pay for it. Can you call it Kool-Aid? really, really smart meta way of looking at, and there's a lot of those shows that are quite meta that look at how the studios work and all that stuff, but this one is smart and engaging, and it's really well written. Seth Rogen's probably his best work ever.
Easily. I think he's definitely reached a creative peak, and that's an Apple TV show. And the other thing I loved about the studio is how it's filmed as well. So they do it through huge long one takes, and then there's one episode which is specifically about one take. But these scenes just go on, and they're walking through like sets, and it just feels like a big high budget production.
Yeah.
And everything just spirals out of control every single episode. The one that I loved was the one where he was having to play a detective to find the lost reels of a movie.
Yeah.
And how that's just sort of developed over time. There's also one where they all get really high as well in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just goes completely.
Cast is incredible.
And the cast is incredible. Yeah.
The budget must have been absolutely incredible to get that many big names involved in it.
You couldn't have made it anywhere else other than Apple, could you?
No.
You watched that one as well.
Yeah, and as someone who works in the industry, the amount of truth to that is astonishing. But they've done it in a way that it's presentable to people who are outside of the industry. So it's, you know, it's tangible. You can, you know, for me, the episode where he visits the set is just everything is... That is perfect. It's perfect TV, really. That's how you do comedy.
He's such a likable... He's just so annoying as a character, because you're like, why are you doing that?
Yes. But
he's so torn, and you're constantly like, I understand you love it and you're doing everything for the right reasons, but you're a fool and you're making the mistakes. It's very cleverly done.
Yeah.
It's well written, and all the characters around him, Sal Saperstein and the lady that... I can't think what her name is, but plays the... Agnes role in Marvel. Catherine Hayne.
Yeah.
Her character is absolutely mad.
And they're all perfect. Because they all know those people, so they play them so well.
Yeah, and Zoe Kravitz, who plays herself in it, it's just so funny when she's on screen.
And I don't normally like those meta sort of... We're all actors, this is what it's like. I don't like them normally, but it's done in such a way that it's sort of... It's not showing off about the industry, but it is. It's nice. You think it's still cool to be involved, but they look like madmen.
It's self-aware enough.
It's so self-aware.
This is mad. The industry that we're working in is mad, and they show that very well on screen.
I think easily that's the best new TV show of the year, and that won a bunch of Emmys as well. The other show that won loads of Emmys as well, which I just want to bring up, is Adolescence. Totally different.
Yes.
Like the polar opposite, but you saw it.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it?
It was one of those shows you sit through it and you can't breathe. I think the episode where they're in a room together, there's two characters. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but there's two characters that sit in a room for the whole episode, essentially.
Yeah.
And the tension is it's incredible.
Yeah. I had the same issue with Some Mothers Do Have Them. For the old listeners there.
But also very sort of its time. And it's currently a huge issue ongoing, I think.
I mean, having a child that's about to go into secondary school, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of it. But I mean, it's so incredibly well done. I think the because it's like the studio, it's filmed in one take. Mm-hmm. The studio does a bit of that, but it breaks them up. But Adolescence is presented as one long take.
Yeah.
The artifice and the flashiness of it sometimes threatens to overtake the drama of it, because you're focusing on like how did they do that. Like there's one scene where they go in the van to the paint store.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're like, how have they done this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're then thinking about that instead of the story, it kind of, it's a fine line, and I can see why it did really well at the TV awards and whatnot. But, for me personally, I would go back and watch The Studio. I wouldn't probably go back and watch Adolescence.
I think it was a hard watch first time around. I think you'd be mad to go and revisit that voluntarily for the second time.
Yeah.
I'll skip it.
You'll skip it. Okay. Any other shows that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I wanted to mention The Rehearsal.
Okay. Okay. I'm aware of this. Nathan.
Okay. So, yeah, Nathan Fielder, yeah. Who is, I want to say, I'm going to say comedian. Have you heard of The Rehearsal?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's a documentary / comedy series, where his view is he allows people to rehearse real life situations so they can get it to perfection to then play out in real life. So if you've got hard decisions to make in real life, rehearse, and then you get to play out. Season one was 3-4 years ago. Second season came out this year, and it's very much focused on safety and aviation.
Right.
So he looked into the why plane crashes happened and what was the root cause, and he believed it was the relationship between the pilot and the co-pilot, and they're not having any pre-existing relationship. He really looked into this, and this treads the line of you're thinking the whole time, is this real? Like, did he do this? And this is nonsense. I can't say much more than that without giving anything away, because it's one of those where the whole time you're questioning whether Nathan Fielder is a genius or an absolute idiot.
Right.
It's fantastic TV, and he'll play out. There's one episode where he becomes Sully. And he looks into how Sully avoided a catastrophe and landed in the Hudson Bay.
Wait, honestly, what is this on?
Sky. This is on Sky. Oh, okay. This is on Sky.
And HBO in America?
HBO in America, yeah. Mm. Just be prepared to... I think you've got to go in with an open mind, because it's nonsense at times, but very intriguing, and that he's meticulous with his detail.
Is it for half an episode? Sorry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. See, I watched the Nathan Fielder thing on Paramount, The Curse, with Emma Stone.
Oh, I didn't see that. No, okay.
And I couldn't get past the first episode. I found it so incredibly awkward and cringe. And
okay, this might not be the show for you.
It was so painful to watch.
Well, he's busy. He's rewatching the studio anyway.
Yeah,
so. But that's a great recommendation. I think I might check that one out. It's been on my to watch list for a while, and I haven't really.
And if you've not seen season one, it's bonkers.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else from you?
Two quick ones from me for our anime fans. Been an amazing year for anime.
Let's have the anime siren. Here we go.
It's been an amazing year for anime. I'm sure there's a Venn diagram of Bond fans and our listeners and anime, but there's a new one called Gachi Akuta, which is phenomenal. Very, very good. It's about... Okay, explaining these animes. It's about a kid who falls off... He basically lives in this place, and if people are wrongdoers and they, you know, basically instead of going to jail, they throw them off the land and they go get thrown into this rubbish pile, which is basically the planet below. And then it's about how he meets some people and they've got to go try and get back up. It's quite convoluted, and they have powers and stuff like that. But it's very well made, very, very impressive. And it's probably the big one at the moment.
Where would you watch that if you wanted to get into it?
Crunchyroll.
Right, okay.
Crunchyroll. But quite a lot of these are going to Netflix, but the new ones tend to be on Crunchyroll. Yeah. Crunchyroll's the big one for anime.
That's like the anime streaming platform, isn't it?
Yeah, it's phenomenal, if you like anime. And the other thing I was going to flag, which I don't think is one of the best things this year, but I think it's worth talking about, Anna Partridge, How Are You?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I think is a return to form, I would say, for Partridge. I think he's Coogan has got a little bit of a problem in that he's doing too much Partridge a lot of the time nowadays. I think around this time probably got to the point where we're like, well, the character's a bit complicated who he is. I think How Are You is a return to form for who the character is, because he's playing the same Partridge he played back 20, 30 years ago, and it's a progression. I think with things like this time, it's a bit confusing because he's meant to be washed out, and you the interest in the character, the fact that he is washed out, that's the character. Then he's on this time and you're like, well, he's not washed out, is he? He's actually,
he's on a primetime show.
So you don't root for him because he's doing quite well. Whereas this is more like back to the form where he's not in a good position. He's still getting a documentary show, but they're very experimental in that show. They try different things out. They try first person episode where he's like hiking and he's filming it himself. Very interesting one to watch, and I think it draws a lot from the history of Partridge.
I saw some very funny social clips where he was doing like adverts sponsors, which was very funny when I watched it. I was just like, yeah, this is like the part. It's when they put Partridge into those situations that you know and recognize.
Yes.
And he can play himself in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sort of recognize that. And the one episode I saw of it, I thought, yeah, this feels like the Partridge that you want.
Yes, it is. I think it is. It's Partridge how he would be now if you compared him with Nomi No New and things like that, it's what he would have become.
And also, if you are a fan of Partridge, you want to seek out more, I think From the Oast House, the first three series of that on Audible, is some of the best Partridge content.
Some people say that Partridge audio content is the best he's ever done.
I think it's the best way to digest your Partridge.
It's very good. And I also say that anything that's got Lynn in it elevates it.
Yes.
So there's two From the Oast House series that don't have Lynn in. There's one that has Lynn in it, elevates it massively. How Are You has Lynn in.
Yeah. Bringing it back to Bond, I just thought occurred to me it would be great for Partridge to do a Bond documentary.
I mean, that
because obviously we've got that great episode of
go meet some of the people from it.
Yeah, exactly, and like him to do a podcast like this about Bond because it would be gold if they.
It's just a pity you can't get Roger Moore on it.
No, exactly. I mean,
he could do the voice, couldn't he? Yeah. We recorded this 5 years ago.
Yeah. Is that everything from you? You want to highlight?
Yeah, that's me done.
I've got a couple I want to mention, and there's a TV show I know we all want to talk about, so we'll get to that. Yes, but the couple that I want to mention are Pixar released an animated series this year called Win or Lose, which totally flew under my radar, but my daughter was watching it, and it's about a softball team, and it's about the run-up to their finals in a game. Pixar, softball, I was a bit like, it's not for me. Each episode is a masterpiece, basically, and it's about each different character within the softball team and how they run up to it. And it's a hard one to sell, probably harder to sell than the anime, but it's like each episode is so inventive and so Pixar. Mm. It's like they've done eight little Pixar films.
It's an anime trope. They do that in anime.
Right, okay.
They do sport really well in anime.
Right. So maybe it's inspired by that, but like I would definitely recommend, if you've got Disney Plus, Win or Lose, it's probably 8 25-minute episodes, and each one is perfect, and it's so good. Each one is from a different perspective, and it's so engaging. Mm. So I would recommend that. Mm. There was a HBO show this year called Task with Mark Ruffalo in it, which is this crime thing in which he played this like aging FBI guy, and that was like 8 or 10 episodes. Very worth watching if you like Drizzly autumnal HBO murder type things. That's worth your time. And then the other one, which I don't know, it doesn't sound like either of you watched, but Alien Earth. The new Alien spin-off series on Disney. Yeah. It's good. It wasn't great, but like it's well worth watching. Like if you have Disney and you want to, if you like Alien. The only thing I didn't really like is it kind of demystifies a lot of the Alien. Like the Alien isn't as central as you might want it to be in a usual Alien TV series.
Yeah.
And then one more, which I'm big into at the moment, which is a BBC crime series called Blue Lights. Have either of you watched this?
No.
So it's on the third series, it's set in Northern Ireland, set in Belfast. It's about trainee police officers in Belfast. Sounds really dry, really Sunday night boring, but it's really, really, really good. I'm not very familiar with Northern Ireland and as a place or how like the politics of the police work, but this is a really good, like, it kind of makes, it's very much of its setting, so it's not like another crime series or police series. It's very much about the politics of Ireland in a way that's very palatable, and it's very believable and very easy to empathise with all the characters. So if you haven't watched Blue Lights on the BBC, I would watch that. Other BBC show that I know we all want to talk about is Traitors.
Now we're talking.
First, before we talk Celebrity Traitors, at the start of the year we had the third series of Regular Traitors.
Yes,
with Jake and Leanne. So did you watch
Mina?
Mina,
yeah.
You didn't watch that one.
I'll make a point here. I don't watch any TV shows, like reality TV shows. I hate them. Yeah. I hate all of them.
Okay.
But I really, really like Traitors Celebrity version.
Okay. I mean, the second, I think we talked about Traitors last year, saying the second series was amazing.
Yeah.
Third series was up there. It wasn't quite as...
Because they put the Seer in.
The Seer,
I think it broke the game slightly.
Yeah.
So one of the... If you've not seen it, I won't reveal who it was, but they basically gave a Seer... Was it a card? What was it given? There was just somebody became the Seer and could find out whether one person was a faithful or a traitor. And so they knew whether somebody, they're true, what they actually were.
That's this year's normal traitors.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I wouldn't want them to use that again. I think they're aware that it might have broken the game slightly.
Yeah. But that was good. It was a good series. That twist was a bit... left field. I think they do have to keep introducing new things to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Celebrity Traitors, though, was a whole different ballgame.
Yes. I mean, the cast that they assembled for this is phenomenal. Like, normally, if you're talking about celebrity reality. And there's a reason you don't watch it, right? It's because
I hate everyone.
I'm a celebrity.
Yeah.
Well, there's no celebrities in there. You know, they're very low level celebrities, and it's not people you recognise.
I think the thing with celebrities is that they're very smart, and they know that Traitors is associated as being a cerebral show. Mm-hmm. You have to get clever people on it.
Yeah.
That you are. It doesn't matter so much with the non-celebrity one because you don't know if they're clever or not to begin with.
Yeah.
And it pans out, and you sort of lose the ones that are not that interesting. But with the celebrity one, you've got to make it good. You can't have towie people on there. You've got to have people that you think are clever.
Yes,
Love Islanders. Yeah, it's. I think the thing that they with Celebrity Traitors is after three series of a civilian version, the BBC felt quite resistant to the idea of it because in Australia and the US they had celebrity versions, and they basically. In the US, they only have the celebrity version. Mm-hmm. It's all people from reality TV series. So that kind of is a different thing. In Australia, they did...
The first was civilian. The second was a mixture.
And it was the worst
Traitors I've ever seen.
And it completely broke the game, didn't it?
Yeah, they won't make any more.
Yeah.
So
I think that is making a comeback in Australia with civilians. Yeah. Okay. But this series of celebrity traitors, it was clear that the franchise was such a success, everyone wanted in it.
Yeah.
In on it. And they were able to cherry pick cast, which was unprecedented in reality TV. Like, even if you think back to like the original series of like Celebrity Big Brother, which was like the big celebrity show, and I'm a celebrity. This was unlike anything else because I think the main thing that worked is I don't think I'd seen any one of the people in it in a reality TV series before. I could have been wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just think about some of the big names in there, I mean, this is for our American listeners, it's probably completely.
It is being like, made available to in America, so they can watch this.
Stephen Fry, who is like.
Oh, no, Stephen Fry from Potter, at least from Potter.
Yeah. Stephen Fry, Jonathan Ross, who was just a TV institution here. Alan Carr, who also a TV institution. Claire Balding, Sport TV, like.
She's classed as a national treasure, isn't she?
Yeah.
Kate Garraway, who's on TV every single day and just is on a level of like celebrity and fame that you just can't match. Tom Daly, who is like an Olympian. But I think what was really smart is they got all these big people, but then they also had some amazing lower level casts that they brought in. People who, you know, you might not have been completely household names, but are now.
Like Joe Marler, who was a former... rugby player.
Joe Marler is going to within 3 years he will have his own chat show and TV. And I think he has been signed up to a new podcast from the producers or something of the Traitors show because he is just people like really liked Joe Marler, didn't they?
Yeah.
He really was impressive on it. But that is I think the thing about that is, I mean, anybody who goes on any of these reality TV shows goes on it because it's an opportunity to. For their career, isn't it? You go on Celebrity, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, because probably your career is not in a good position and that's going to boost you back up to getting the jobs. This is the opposite. It's like everybody who went on it, they didn't need any help. They were all like, Stephen Fry is not going around going, I need somebody involved. He actually went on an interview with somebody, can't remember who was getting interviewed, it was a podcast somewhere, but he was saying, I would never even dream of ever going on a reality TV show apart from this. They called me and I said, of course I will. I'll be on it in an instant because it's fun.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there's an element to it, which is if people see me on this, they know that they've got me on because I'm smart, or I think at least they think I'm smart. And it really, just being in that list of people, it's like a tick going, yeah, this person's passed the test, and they're, you know, I'd love to see the long list of who they were thinking of putting on that, because
there's been a few people who've said that they were offered or approached and said that they turned it down, including Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais is one of the biggest. I mean, whether you like him or not, it's a huge name.
Yeah.
Richard Osman, he was offered and turned it down because they couldn't guarantee like what if he'd be a traitor. I guess the thing is now. Is whether they can repeat the success of it with a second series. But I do think now, after the success of this series, I mean, it's been the biggest show on TV, full stop, this year. Bigger than Strictly.
That's the only one I've watched.
Yeah. So I do think they've got a bit of an open goal now. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was Hollywood stars, royal family members, even that sort of level of stars next time around. Because they can literally take cherry pick who they want.
And I think with that as well, is definitely there's a part of the celebrity traitors which I think it's almost like you're guaranteed to look good in it. Like nobody looked bad in it. Nobody looked like, I don't think anybody really looked stupid, or they all just looked interesting and part of it. Maybe like the earlier ones, like the, I can't remember the the YouTube guy.
Nico, yeah.
Nico and maybe Paloma Faith didn't really get any opportunity to do anything.
Yeah.
But I always feel like that show, you can guarantee the people involved saying, don't worry, you will look good. You're not going to look bad in the show. It's not like the normal one where you don't know what's going to happen.
I think that the only person that maybe came out of it with a bit of a dent on their reputation was Jonathan Ross.
Essentially.
Because yeah. I think that it reflected badly on him as being a traitor, because he just took all the heat for all of the traitors the whole way through.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a couple of people in there who felt like he might have been too big for his boots or whatever.
I think that's a short-term thing. I think longer term.
Because I think he's come out of it
talking
about it and being quite honest.
Jonathan Ross is an interesting one because he is obviously massive, but in recent years I've not really seen him do anything. So it has actually brought him back. Yeah. And I think there's a thing with the traitors, you know, like on Big Brother, and there are, not that anybody watched that for a long time, but on Big Brother, if you are a villain in Big Brother, people hate you.
Yeah.
Because they go, you know, that person's not very nice and they've basically cheated their way to get this. With that, there's no flaw. You can be horrible to people. You can vote people out and stuff. And then everyone's like, it's not real.
It's a game.
It's a game, and that's what you've got to play. So even with Jonathan Ross doing that, it's like, it's for charity. It's like, he's playing the game. It was just fun for him, wasn't it? He was just having fun.
Yeah.
He wasn't actively voting people out for any other reason than it's the show.
Yeah.
We're actors in
That's true.
How much of the success relies on Claudia Winkleman?
A lot, I think. People like what they're used to. And a lot of the jokes about Claudia Winkleman. I find Claudia Winkleman interesting because she sort of comes in, they're like, oh.
Yeah.
And in the normal version, that works because she's probably quite an imposing figure as a celebrity to the normal people. But these people, they've got Stephen Fry. Like, I don't care. I'm more famous than Claudia Winkleman. I'm not that bothered about her coming in.
One connection, though, because in the US version, it's Alan Cumming. Yeah, he played obviously.
Good
Bond link for anyone that's tuned out at this point.
This is the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Just a reminder.
Paloma Faith could do a Bond song, I think.
Paloma Faith could do a Bond song, yeah. Nick Mohammed, I'd love to see him as M. Sorry, not M, as Q.
Yeah.
I think Celia Imrie would be a great M.
Yeah, well, I thought that. She's basically taken over the mantle from Judi Dench,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Alan Carr, great M.
talk about the format then a little bit. I know we don't want to dwell too long on it because this is the James Bond podcast, but do you feel like... I have a couple of concerns around the format for the celebrity version, which made me not enjoy it quite as much, I think, as the civilian version. Point number one is I think that celebrities were somewhat deferential to their level of fame within the game, which meant that people of lower perceived status were taken out of the game too early.
Well, you look at the it's quite simple. You look at the normal version. The stakes are fame and money. So they win something, they get fame.
Yeah,
Earlier you go out, the less fame you're going to get, and the less you're not going to win anything. The stakes are high. The celebrities, the stakes are not money. They don't care about the charity thing. Is like, it's nice, it's a charity thing. Some of those celebrities probably could just pay that money if they wanted to and go, I really care about this charity, yeah, pay it. So the money it's a MacGuffin. It drives the plot forward, but it doesn't mean anything. Nobody cares about that. I think the driving force of all of them is the fame.
Yeah.
Because each of them is like, I want to look the best in this. Because most of them, probably up to like the halfway through, don't really benefit. Paloma Faith's not really going to benefit from it. That Nico guy might benefit to the extent that nobody knew he was outside of YouTube. Same as Tom Daly, I'm surprised went out so early because he was probably one of the most famous people out of that bunch. But if you look at that sort of that level of, if you're a celebrity, you're going to go, I have to be into the last ones because that might actually make a difference. Like Joe Marler. Joe Marler going out first time, he ain't going to get that show.
Yeah.
He's there till the end and he's one of the most interesting characters. He's going to get a show. He's got a show out of that, a podcast show. So for them, the stakes are very different. And I think they were I think there are two things going on. I think they were voting based on get rid of the people that have no benefit to us. One, because they're saying, this show has to be really interesting. It has to get all the views and I want to be at the end of it to be the winner. So I get all of the glory. But also, I want to be basically in a position where at the end of it, I've made friends with a load of people that will be useful to me. So if you look at someone like Joe Marler, he's now friends with Stephen Fry. He's now friends with Claire Balding.
Yeah, yeah.
he can get them on his show. If he gets Stephen Fry on his new podcast, it's like, well, it's incredible. Like, you know, two years ago, you wouldn't have got any close to Stephen Fry.
I didn't know the name Joe Marler until the TV show came on, and now he is probably
I did know him, but I never... He pops up all the time on Instagram, but I never really follow... I'm not into rugby, so...
Oh, absolute hundy, yeah. He's like, I'm there for him. Whatever he does next, I'm
into he is interesting. Yeah. He's a nice guy. But I think, ultimately, that's what they're playing for, the fame. And they're voting out people going... This person has no benefit to me whatsoever. Like that Nico guy, nobody, Stephen Fry doesn't care. He's like,
they play lip service, don't they?
They play lip service because they're acting. They're all acting and they're all playing a role on a TV show that they want to get the most views and they want to be the good, best looking character on it. It's a skeptical way of looking at it, but it's pretty obvious.
However, the finalists, there was only one household name really that's in the final five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that kind of debunks.
Well, I have a theory about it, and I don't know how correct it is, but I think it's a production. You know, the rules of traitors is like pretty strict. Like, I know in the earlier series they added a new traitor or something, but they can't keep doing that because it defeats the point of the game.
There's less episodes this year, so recruiting a traitor was made null and void this time.
Well, I was looking at the rules, and I was saying to Tanya, what happens if they get rid of all three traitors in three episodes? Is that it? And that is the rule. Like, if that happens, that's the end of it. So you get three episodes. Well, you get 3 days. So then you'd have to turn those, because it's filmed in May at the start of the year. So you have a long time to edit it and put it all together. So you could stretch out 3 days into 8 episodes, 9 episodes. But obviously the format comes after they've done the game. Because they don't know how long it's going to take. It might take 4 days. It might take 10 days, depending on how to do it. But I think with the celebrity one, it's a bit different, because if you're promoting celebrity traitors and you're going, we've got Stephen Fry, we've got Jonathan Ross, we've got this person, they're the draws. And if they all go out in the first 2 days, you've got no draws.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's got to be something where producers go, you cannot vote out these five people for the first 4 days, because we need those to always be on the press stuff. We need them to be there to make it interesting. Because if you'd have ended up, imagine if the last episode was Nico, Paloma Faith,
Lucy Beaumont,
two others that you're not that bothered about. I'm not watching that.
I think you just mentioned the producers there. Let's just follow a word from our producers. We will talk about James Bond again in a minute.
Oh, yeah. The James Bond A to Z podcast.
Got the wrong source for James Bond information and traitors. It's all great points. I think I was saying that the two things I think that sort of made me less enjoy was the celebrities being deferential to each other, and that sort of made changes to the gameplay, which I love in the civilian series, where it's an equal playing field, right? And it's, you know, and then the other thing is the money. Like, if you're not playing for your own, if you're not playing for personal gain, then like that sort of makes the end game kind of a bit null and void. Like, if someone wins money for charity, that's great. And that's why at the end, like, Alan Carr won, spoilers, but like, the two guys around him were like, don't worry about
the money,
it.
The money's not enough.
But in the series two, when Harry shafted Molly, God, that was drama. Yeah. That was proper drama.
Yeah, and they have to work with each other. They might work with each other in future. It's like, you know, you talked about earlier, I think it was Nick and
Celia. They're on a project together.
They can't fall out. They've got to work on projects together. So the stakes are very, very different. But I also think the money isn't enough. It's like that much money. They got to, what, £85,000 or something like that for a show which is probably worth millions. If you want the money to be relevant, make it higher so that they're like, you've got £1 million for a charity.
Yeah.
Then they'd be like, I really have to try harder.
Twice as much money for the faithful if they win as it is for a charity.
Yeah, yeah. And then they're thinking, Christ, there's more going on here. It's not just me. It's like, I can't lose the charity that I'm working with. So I think there's an issue with the stakes with the statue.
But having said, right, so the New Zealand one has celebrities in it, right?
Right.
And if you watch that first episode, they are not into it at all. They don't care. They set them a mission to find stars. They're drinking wine, looking in the cushions, going, it's not there. These celebrities really put themselves into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say that from watching the series as a whole, Alan Carr as a winner, he's probably like an unlikely winner of being traitors, but he gave in every single episode 100%. Every time he spoke to camera, he was performing and delivering a traitor's performance, which is what you wanted, what you needed for that show to succeed. And for him to get that far was brilliant. Joe Wilkinson, I think, also had that in that he understood that it was part of a performance. I'm showing me he didn't get so far.
Yeah.
I think some of them, like David Olusoga, like, I mean, he was just probably the worst player of the whole game. Yeah. Just made, he's one of those that just like floated through to the end.
Yes.
Joe Marler, Alan Carr, to me, are the two absolute winners, the absolute hundies of this show. Yeah. Like Joe Marler, I just
he was playing the game. He wanted, he knew what he was doing. And he had, you could tell he had a thirst for going, I need to be prominent. I need to be saying stuff. Yeah. I need to draw attention to myself.
If you're not a traitor, you need to be the traitor hunter to get the airtime.
Yeah. So because Stephen Fry hardly got any airtime.
I mean, they've called him a big dog, but he brought nothing to the game.
I mean, he might have done stuff outside of the edit, but he was like, he's got nothing to gain or lose from it. He's like, he's one of the most famous men in the world, especially in Britain.
Yeah.
But then, before we finish on this, one thing to flag about it is I absolutely hate the tasks. The tasks are pointless. They need to come up with a new format.
They're just filler, aren't they?
They're filler.
Yeah, yeah.
But they need to come up with a task that actually generates, like, because all the tasks, they like work together, they do it, and they finish.
Well, something I saw the other day was if they, within the tasks, if traitors can earn their murders within the tasks, then it makes it like traitors versus.
So you need people looking at other people
that,
going,
you need
there's
that.
A reason
why. Why did you do that in the task?
Because there were some of them where they went, oh, he took a bit longer to do that.
Yeah, he's 64.
He's just nobody's doing that to like trick you.
Yeah.
It's like if you might like, say to three people, right, you three are giving out the medals based on how hard people try. Then you would be like, okay, now that's not fair. Like Nick Mohammed doing that thing where he was like, you do that.
Okay. Yeah.
That whispering bit.
That's what you need.
More of that.
Yeah. Right. So I didn't anticipate we'd spend this long talking about Celebrity Traits. So I do apologize.
James Bond Motor Z podcast.
we'll talk a bit more about Bond in a minute once we've talked about the best movies of the year, movies of 2026, etc. So I do appreciate your listening. Stephen Fry definitely could be in the next James Bond film. Celia Imrie, bring them all in. Yeah. Just make it a Traitors special. Anyway, let's take a break there and we will be right back.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Let's talk about some of our favourite movies of 2025. Who wants to start?
I mean, I haven't got any. So, Ballad of Wallace Island.
Wow, you've gone straight in there. Straight in. Bang.
Was that the biggest one?
I think that's, to me, that's one of the best movies.
I didn't think you'd think that. I think it's a really good, solid movie. I haven't watched many of the movies, but I suppose you said it's a mid-year for movies, so.
Ballad of Wallace Island, Tim Key.
Tom Basden
and Carey Mulligan.
Yep.
Set on a Scottish island. Is it Scottish Island?
Yes.
And it's about a lottery winner who reunites his favourite folk duo to put on a performance. And it is, for me, I think, one of the best movies, if not the best movie of 2025.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've not watched many movies. So I would say it's my best movie of 2025, but I've watched about three movies and some of those have been Fantastic Four and Superman. So, but what I would say is that if I was to compare it with films that I have watched previously, like the big films that I thought have been really, really good, I just think it's a heartwarming, nice. Tim Key's fantastic in it. I probably wouldn't put it down as like one of my favourite films. I think it's really, really good. I just, you know, don't think it's...
Did you see it?
I've not seen it. No.
Oh my God.
Really
you've got to see it. I think you're underselling it a little bit. I think it is.
Maybe it's going to have more than so many films this year.
Yeah, maybe. But I do think it's one of the best. It's absolutely right. It's completely warm and it's...
Parochial.
Parochial, yeah. Very honest and just a really good, like, rewatchable movie. I can see it's a movie that I will watch many times. It reminds me in terms of tone and warmth and humour of Holdovers, which I know we all loved last year. And I know it's coming to Netflix again for Christmas this year. So I absolutely loved that. And I would have put that in my top three of the year easily.
I probably would have ended in the top three of the year. It's probably because I'm, you know, being careful because I haven't watched many films. So I don't want to just throw in the one film I've watched just being the best film of the year. But it is very good. And I think Tim Key is perfect for movies like that because He's very funny in it, but he's just funny because he's Tim Key. He actually is a good character in it as well.
I think he could... I personally think he deserves award recognition for it because I think it's absolutely a brilliant performance. And I know it's quite... sympathetic, isn't it? It's very like you feel for him and you just have a lot of warmth for him. He's not an arsehole. He's just very genuine and you want to see him succeed. Yeah, if you haven't seen
and Basden's great because Basden doesn't normally act in things. He's more of a writer.
The music's fantastic as well. It's about folk music and I really, really like that side of it. So that was up there for me. Any others?
Well, I'll finish mine quickly. John Candy, I Like Me.
Yeah, that was...
Which I thought was good. Very much in the same sort of ilk as Roger... Was it from Roger with Love?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
It's nice. It's interesting. John Candy is someone who hasn't had a lot of coverage in the past in that sort of documentary format. But I think it was interesting to hear about, find out a bit about his life. It made him very likeable. It made you go, I was right about John Candy. He's a likeable, nice guy. But at the end of it, you're like, I didn't really learn a lot. I just you know.
It was a very tragic story, really. I mean, I think that he had this persona on screen where he was so lovable and gregarious. And it was so reassuring to hear that that's what he was like in real life. And to hear from his kids and all the people that worked with him, it was so tragic, really, what happened to him and how the system really chewed him up and spat him out, and really he struggled a lot with his mental health.
I think about the weight and stuff was quite interesting. He had to retain the weight because people wanted him to be that guy, that he couldn't lose the weight. It's really interesting. It's a simple little watch, really well made and edited, and there's some of the stuff that got involved. I think Ryan Reynolds company.
Ryan Reynolds produced it, and also directed by Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks.
Well worth a watch.
It's on Prime Video in the UK. I don't know about globally, but
yeah.
Anything else?
The only other thing is I've got one more, and it's an anime, but this anime is like probably the highest grossing film of the year. Demon Slayer Infinity Castle.
Okay. What's that about?
You must have heard about this.
I mean, I've heard
of it. It's beaten every other film at the box office.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Demon Slayer is like, for the past 4 or 5 years, Demon Slayer has been one of the biggest animes that's been released. This year has been a really interesting year for movie anime because basically anime has always been a series.
Yeah.
And this year, quite a lot of shifting to go, well, actually, we're just going to turn this series into a movie because we make more money out of it. Demon Slayer... Instead of doing the final season, they've just gone, we're just going to turn it into 3 movies, and we're going to show those 3 movies over 4 years or 5 years. And their budget is phenomenal. Like, the animation is incredible. You can watch it without knowing what's going on. You could watch it on mute because the animation is like the best the world has ever seen. It's phenomenal.
If you weren't aware of the series, could you just dip in and watch that film?
No, you'd be chaos.
Right.
You'd purely watch it as an art thing.
Right, okay.
But it would be amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Toby, our friend, I took him to see the last movie. The last movie was just like an edit of some of the episodes. And he'd never seen any before. And he was like, that was incredible. I don't know what was going on, but I've never seen any animation like that. The animation is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But the concept is like, you know, there's a kid whose parents are killed by demons. And then he goes to fight the demons. And he trains to become like this guy who fights the demons. But that film has... The growth, I think it's like 600 million or something already. Phenomenal. Like, it's beaten Fantastic Four, it's beaten Superman Legacy, and a lot of other anime studios are going, whoa, let's step back now. Should we just make films instead of making series? Because there's clearly a Western focus on this. And every time I've been to see anime films at the cinema in Brighton now, they're rammed.
Like,
just full of people watching them. So there's definitely a shift this year. So we're getting too much depth on that, but I imagine there's some people who've listening to this that will go, yeah, I love that, I've seen that.
Yeah, join us in 2026 for the anime A to Z, which
maybe there'll be a Bond talking. Anime.
Well, maybe, exactly. Yeah. This is something I've always said about the pre-titles, different animation studios doing that. Brendan?
I really haven't seen many films either this year. I think Warfare would be the one
on my list.
Which is a real time based on real world events set in the Iraq War, rescue mission for a US platoon.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Visually.
And Alex sound Garland, design. The sound co-directed. Design. Co-directed.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw that at the cinema as well, and the sound design absolutely blew me away. Mm-hmm. There's a bit it's got the biggest jump scare of the year for me, because there's a bit where, I won't spoil it, but a moment happens and I literally leaped out of my seat from the sound design that happens around it. And yeah, I absolutely loved Warfare. I think the one thing I would say about Warfare that I didn't feel was, it was very almost, what's the correct word? Almost propaganda for US military. I don't feel like I got the sense of the Iraqi side of the conflict. And if it had that, and it didn't end with like a, almost like a blooper reel of like the Americans themselves. It felt like it undercut it a little bit. I love that movie. As a partner piece to Civil War as well, which came out last year.
The previous year, I think A24 doing some really interesting stuff.
Yeah,
that's some pickings from me. We'll talk about Bridget Jones, shall we?
No, I've got one for him, which is not going to be on your list, but I bet you've watched it a lot. K-pop Demon Hunters.
It's on my list. K-pop Demon Hunters, which, is this Sony animated Netflix movie, and came out in the summer, I think. I came downstairs on the day after it was released, and my 9-year-old at the time, or 10-year-old, I can't remember who she was, but she was watching it. Like, what's this? She was like, it's K-pop Demon Hunters. I was like, okay. She'd been tracking it because it'd been on the Netflix coming up thing for a while. Mm-hmm. It looked interesting. And then one day I was hungover on a Sunday morning. I'd been out with some friends. I said, can we watch K-pop Demon Hunters? Because I heard so much about it. And I watched it. It is fantastic. It is so funny. The songs are so brilliant. And yeah, I can't praise that film enough. I've watched it a few times since. And I do think it is fantastic. So you have seen it?
I've seen it.
Yeah. What did you think?
So I was flying up to Scotland and I was just downloading a film, and I'd seen it pop up a lot. I didn't know what it was. Seen it pop up a lot, and I was like, I'm going to have a few beers. I'll download it and watch it on the flight and turn it off if I don't like it. But I think it is, there's so many elements that you can look at and go, that is really, really impressive. Like, the story is so simple, but really, really well done. The characters are great. The music is the best part of it.
Yes.
The music is the hook that pulls everyone in.
Yes.
Because people will hear the music and go, what is that music? And the film itself is like, you know, it's not a groundbreaking story. It's a kid's teenage story.
But it's about a K-pop group who basically are protecting the world from demons. It's like underworld of demons. So it's kind of based in Korean like mythology. So it's got some part of that. And they then have to fight this boy band that emerged. It's K-pop Soulja Boys.
Yeah.
And their hit song Soda Pop. But I think what's really good for young girls specifically is it's about a group who are, it's all about their loyalty to each other and how they stick together. And they have to then work together and also like overlook like preconceptions about who they are.
Yeah.
And also, they're quite, like, messy. They spend a lot of time eating, which is quite fun for, like, teenage girls or young girls to see that, like, being hungry and eating a lot of stuff is quite, like, it's core to being a teenager, right? It's which I did really...
It's very real and accessible for people. They watch it, and kids especially watch it and go, that's great, this is, like, normal people. But I think for the industry, it's really important because that is a great example. You look at, like, you know, Sony project that's Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
That's a project which obviously is an IP that they can sell. This is a new thing. This is completely new, but they've put effort into it. The songs are like fantastic. They actually had different actors playing the characters than the people singing the songs, which is not very common.
Yeah.
So they've got both groups of them doing like tours, separate tours. So I got really confused. I was, who are these three women that are on this interview? It's like, because they're different people.
Voice actors and singing actors.
But they're both getting as famous as the other.
Yeah.
And I think actually, I mean, all of the singers are K-pop singers, whereas the actors are just actors. They're not specifically associated with Korea in any way. But the quality of the music is phenomenal. Like, that's the thing that I keep singing the songs.
Yeah.
Like, I've got them in my head. But the fact that that is a new IP that has got that big and it's a Netflix thing suggests that Netflix things don't have to be crap.
No.
You can make them good and they can become bigger.
I think, but the core part of it is that Sony Animation Studios who did like Spider-Verse I can't think what the other thing is that they're known for doing, but they obviously invested a lot of time and money. They didn't think it was going to be big. So they sold it to Netflix and it was just an absolute phenomenon. And I know people have compared it to other musical things, what the thing it reminds me the most of in terms of how ubiquitous it is Encanto, when that came out and it had the Lin-Manuel Miranda soundtrack and those songs just were everywhere.
Yeah,
it's that level.
Yeah,
it's Frozen level of how popular it is with kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that it's enjoyable for adults is really important.
There will be many more films, I imagine. From
I think there'll be a live action version down the line as well. Yeah. A sequel's been announced. I think it's like 2029 the sequel comes out, which is ages away. But I'm glad you mentioned that. Another one I wanted to mention from my perspective, Black Bag, we mentioned it earlier. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it, no.
So that's a spy film from Steven Soderbergh, and it is Michael Fassbender and Cate Blanchett play like a couple of British spies, MI6. They're a couple, and they are at the centre of this conspiracy in which one of them appears to be have turned and gone rogue and work on the other side. It's a really interesting spy movie. Pierce Brosnan plays like the M role in it. In that, it's so small scale. Most of the action scene or most of the scenes are people sat around a dinner table having conversations, which makes it a bit Le Carré-esque. So there's no like, there's like one explosion in the movie, which is in the trailer where a car gets blown up. But all the rest of it is about personal, like interpersonal relationships, trying to figure things out. Michael Fassbender is fantastic in it. If you get a chance to see that, I would definitely seek that out. I think that's probably one of the only spy movies that was released this year.
I've forgotten about Michael Fassbender. He's probably got the age now where he is moving away from anything sort of action reorientated into that realm now, isn't he? Probably good.
I've got a few horror esque movies that I wanted to mention.
Let's spin through those.
Neither of you are too much into that, but The Long Walk.
So that's quite a good concept. High concept. Yeah,
which is based on a Stephen King book. I thought that was a really good like summer blockbuster in that it was so bleak and so dark and
classic Stephen King.
Yeah. But didn't pull any of its punches. It was a really gripping movie. It's about like these teenagers who compete in this long walk across the country to win money. So it's kind of like the antithesis of The Running Man, another like Stephen King thing. So it's like the same thing. They're both competing for money, but one's running and one's walking. But it's really good. Cooper Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son's the main character. And David Johnson's in it. But that is a really, really bleak and dark movie where in the middle of the summer when it came out, you felt this not going to go this dark, and it goes that dark. It's like an Empire Strikes Back sort of ending. It's so bleak. Bring Her Back, which is a horror movie with Sally Hawkins in it, and it's about a woman who brings in two foster kids into her house, and she is basically trying to resurrect her dead child. I don't want to say too much more about it, but again, an incredibly bleak movie, but well worth seeing if you're into that sort of thing. And then 28 Years Later.
I did actually meant to watch that, but it's got to be on streaming now, hasn't it? Better watch it tonight.
I'm a big fan of the 28 Days, Weeks films and the years
later. You love a zombie, don't you?
I love a zombie.
Yeah.
It took what was already established and just did something completely new, completely fresh, completely weird. It's a weird, weird movie, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Two more films to mention. This one came at the start of the year, and you probably forgot it came out, but A Real Pain with Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, yeah.
And Kieran Culkin. Kieran Culkin went
Which is very, very well received.
Yeah. Loved that movie. That was the start of this year. One of my favourites of the year. But my favourite movie of the year, apart from Ballad of Wallace Island, is One Battle After Another. Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
I've had so many mixed reactions from that film.
It's a really long movie, but it's really funny.
Right.
And so I would say it's probably the funniest Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Leonardo DiCaprio plays a guy who works with like fringe organizations. He's like a terrorist, basically. He goes off grid when his the sort of his terrorist organization gets uncovered. He goes off grid. He has a daughter, and then it's about the guy, the army officer, who wants to basically hunt them down. Years and years later, and he has to come out of hiding, go on the run with his daughter. It absolutely tanked at the box office. I think it didn't bring its money back, but it was also they spent too much money on it. But I think it's one of the funniest movies I've seen all year in terms of like an action comedy. It's brilliant. So that would be my number one tip. If you don't watch Ballad of Wallace Island, One Battle After Another.
No mention for Knives Out 3 then, which we all saw, obviously, at the tail end of last year.
Yeah, I mean, but Knives Out, just keeping that...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, let's do a, let's really talk about that next year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Fine. We'll do the Christmas episode next year.
Yeah, we'll
or an Instagram post.
Just so you... it's clear.
And Stranger, and we'll talk about Stranger Things next year as well.
And do you guys want to talk about movies next year, or should we skip that?
We could do a quick one.
Yeah. What's coming out?
Odyssey, I think, is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Because Nolan's involved and the story is phenomenal. Dune, obviously, is... I don't really remember a lot of the last two Dunes.
Mm.
I seem to watch... I walked out going, that's all right. I'm not massively into those films, but I think they'd be big. I actually think Spider-Man's going to be interesting.
Mm.
I think Spider-Man's the only thing Marvel's got now that's interesting. I think that might hit a billion. I think that's probably going to be a good deal. But I think that's justifiably going to hit a billion based on story. I think Doomsday is going to be crap. But I think it will hit a billion.
Avengers Doomsday, to be clear.
Avengers Doomsday, I think it'll be rubbish, but will hit a billion. I think Spider-Man's probably going to be a good film. Because I think they realise that that's the one part of the IP that actually has longevity. Spider-Man's massive, isn't it? You use Spider-Man properly, you do it well. That's it. Don't care about anything else going on next year.
Great.
Anything for me, Brennan?
No, TV series though.
Okay, go on.
The Trip.
Okay.
Oh, okay. What's season four?
Season four. Is it four now or five?
I don't know. Where's this one?
Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon.
Rob Brydon. Where playing are they themselves. This time? Where are they this time? Should have checked that.
I can't remember last one was. Last one I watched was Italy.
We've done Greece since then.
Okay.
So not interested in Mandalorian and Grogu?
Honestly, I didn't realise that that was a film until you mentioned it. The marketing behind that and the interest that people have in it is so low. I just thought, oh, it's just another Mandalorian series. And I might have even assumed it had happened because I had so little interest in Star Wars IP stuff on Disney now. But no, I have no interest in that stupid film.
I mean, it's the first Disney Star Wars film since Rise of Skywalker.
That's a nail in the coffin for the Star Wars films, isn't it? Because nobody's going to be interested in that. And that was the biggest thing
the trailer
ever,
made it look years. So TV. Anyway, so Brendan, The Trip.
To the Northern Lights.
Okay.
So it's, Iceland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scandinavia.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, they're always good value, those two, playing over-characterised versions of themselves. If you haven't seen it, highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
There's two movies that I want to highlight for next year, which I'm really excited for. In June, Odyssey, yes, I'm into that. I don't know how interested I am in Greek mythology, but like Christopher Nolan, yeah.
Odyssey's a very interesting story.
Interested in that. But Steven Spielberg has a new UFO film coming out in June.
Oh, yeah, it's not, no details about it, really.
No details, yeah. Still untitled. It's Josh O'Connor in it. Whether it's connected to...
Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind.
Close Encounters or War of the Worlds, who knows. But I'm very excited for that. That's in June. And then the other one I'm looking forward to is that Tom Cruise has done a movie with Alejandro Iñárritu, which is completely, again, mysterious. No. That is going to be
I'm done with
October.
Tom Cruise now. I'm done.
But he's going back to drama. And so, I'm quite interested
firm,
in that
The
one.
Firm 2. I'll be up for that.
Yeah. And then, obviously, June Part 3, which we'll get to see what Bond 26 director Denis Villeneuve will do. And that is in December. Again, feels more like a postscript to the first two because it's
Wicked.
Based on new... Wicked is out. It's been out.
Oh, yeah. I've just not noticed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's next year. Why don't we talk quickly about Bond 26 again? I know that this is the James Bond Editor podcast, so we should do that. But we had a question from a listener, which I will, when I get to it, explain what that answer is. It was... there's a couple here about Bond 26. Will Margot Robbie... be a Bond girl?
No.
Why or why not?
Does she want to be? She's moved past that stage of her career, I think. I think she's probably a beyond Bond girl now, I would say.
I think so, yeah. She's probably too big to be a Bond girl,
that's,
I would imagine.
That's a question from Robert Scott.
And she's very much focused on not being the female, you know, stereotypical female character in films now.
I guess the link is that she was in Barbie, which is Amy Pascal. I guess that's
maybe
that.
Maybe she might play a new Bond girl, which is not the love interest. There's a different. There's a new type of Bond girl. Yeah, maybe she's a bit of an obvious. They're not normally that
obvious. Yeah. They talk about Sydney Sweeney and all these different people, but I think they want to look for someone who's sort of on the cusp of
Villeneuve. I don't think he's going to do... He's not obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A question from Alex Gravy. Grevy is, love the podcast, guys. Does the obvious best choice, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, still have a shot at playing James Bond?
I think so. I don't think it's a big shot. I think there's probably now Villeneuve is involved. I can't see Aaron Taylor-Johnson working with Villeneuve. Seems like a bit of a mismatch. But I wouldn't rule it out. Still probably one of the top 20.
I think I... Oh, yeah, but that's because you've ruled it out. Then.
I think we're within the top 20.
Yeah, it might be a wild card.
Because I would rule out. I think I think it's going to be a much more interesting cast.
Yeah.
Due to the fact it's Villeneuve.
Think if I hark back to my theory in the last episode, which is we'll get a letterboxed James Bond, then Aaron Taylor-Johnson is not that actor. I think it needs to be someone in the mould of, like, you know, the guys who are playing the Beatles in the Beatles biopic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Paul Mescal,
yes.
The Harris Dickinson, the
hipsters.
The hipsters, yeah. I think it's going to be... I think we'll get a hipster Bond.
Oh, yeah.
I think Josh O'Connor is probably a good sort of possibility for it.
You're going to get a Chalamet Bond. Not a Chalamet Bond, as in it'll be like Chalamet, but that group...
Yeah, that group of people.
Someone Villeneuve can nurture and shape and...
Yeah, but it has a rising star and has a cachet of their own that they can bring to it. Like, if you have a Harris Dickinson Bond, I think that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're basically just leading on to the...
The Beatles, yeah. Jack Loudon, I always thought would be a good Bond. I don't know if he's...
I got Loudon down.
You got Loudon?
I think Loudon is a great shout. I think... He's not a Villeneuve shout. He's not a Villeneuve actor. Can you imagine him in Dune or something like that? I don't think he's that. He's in Rings of Power and he doesn't work in that sort of...
Is he?
He plays Sauron in a couple of episodes. But he's very down to earth, real...
He's like a TV...
Feels like a real actor, person, a tangible person.
Mm.
And Villeneuve, just make it on Dune. Like, you know, Jack Loudon would look weird in Dune, wouldn't he? People like Chalamet, people like what's her face,
Zendaya,
who are sort of not real people. You can see them as stars, can't you? Chalamet, you can't see as being in a drama, ITV drama. Jack Loudon, you can see being in, you know, My Family. Doesn't really. There's a difference between those people. Villeneuve seems to work with these sort of dreamy, elusive characters,
almost otherworldly.
I mean, I'm not saying Chalamet's otherworldly, but he's not going to be in an episode of My Hero, is he? He's not going to work.
Why are they your two go-tos?
Because I can't think of any other...
Midsommar Murders.
So we're ruling out Lee Mack. Is that what we're saying? We're ruling out Lee Mack.
But you did say him. No, you didn't say him. Josh O'Connor, I think, is that ilk. Timothy Chalamet, but British.
Yeah.
A little bit... interesting looking, not a normal... I mean, you could see him in The Darling Buds of May, but he could also pull off Dune. He could be in Dune and still be British.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's why I think someone like that would work. Anything else that you want to see from Bond 26 at this stage? Villains? Bond girls?
Not Blofeld.
Theme songs?
I would like them to shift the Bond girl thing. I think it's time to change a few things.
Yeah.
I think there's an opportunity here to go, it's been such a long time since we've done these things. We can change things now. Like, we don't have to stick to the format.
Yeah.
Craig's era did change things a bit, but, you know, you still end up, top trump cards, you've still got the Bond girl, you've still got the gadget, you've still got the villain and stuff. You can change that now. You can go, well, actually, we're just not having a Bond girl. We're just having women in the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then if they say, oh, who's the Bond girl? And there's a woman in it.
Yeah.
It's not a Bond girl, it's just a character.
And pad the characters out. The female characters need to be actual characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you would hope we would get from this iteration.
Yeah, and not an actual character for the sake of going, we've got Jinx in it.
Yeah.
She's a spy. She could be, well, she's not. She's rubbish.
Yeah.
Let's just, like, slow horses. Use slow horses as a model. Like, you know, each of the characters is a character. Nobody is a supporting character. Even though you sort of have Jack Loudon as the main character, but he's not really, because he sort of disappears and somebody else comes in.
I don't know if Blade Runner is a good comparison for female characters, because one was a hologram, one was a synthetic, what do they call them in that? I don't think there was that many interesting female characters, but Arrival obviously had Amy Adams as the main character. So he can make interesting female characters. Sicario had Emily Blunt as the lead. So he does have that sort of within his within his world.
It depends how they go. I think there's an opportunity now to shift things. Just how they do that would be different. It would be surprising if they said, we're just going to go back to the same system, do the same things. Because with the old stuff, like even up until the Craig stuff, you get a level of excuse by going, we have to follow this format. Yeah. And even though Bond girls aren't problematic in a lot of ways, but you still go, do you still need those? You don't have to do it like that. And they were going, we have to. We're the Broccolis. We do this same every time. We have to stick to this format. Now you go, no, we don't have to do that anymore because we can make it different. And we'll start creating something interesting without sticking to the same format. It might be boring if they did stick to the format and you go, guys, it's 2026. Can we move on a little
bit? I think it makes Bond.
Especially if you go for the younger generation, they'll be like, why is there a Bond girl?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is there a Bond girl?
Well, it wouldn't make sense. It would be jarring. Yeah. It would be jarring because you're going to have a Gen Z Bond.
They don't want sex and violence too much. Yeah, they want action and intrigue, I think. Yeah. So maybe Claudia Winkleman would be a good Bond girl for
Cecilia.
Celia Emery.
Let's not talk about traitors.
Cool. Okay. Well, are we done?
We're done.
What about the quiz?
It's that time of year.
Yes. Okay.
It's quiz time.
Okay. Here we go. The time of year I lose every single question.
So you've got a choice this time. So what we're going to do, the format is, I've got four Bond actors, the main Bond actors. Connery, Moore, Dalton, Brosnan, Craig. Actually, no, I've got five. I just haven't got those in me. And you'll see why. Yeah. Because I've got their top 10 critic-rated Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't actually have to know a fact.
But. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're not going to do all five. But which one would you like to choose?
As the reigning loser, you can choose first.
Yeah.
Which Bond?
Yeah. Well, you're both going to do it together. So you're going to have the top 10.
Oh, okay.
And we'll do it one by one and you will see how many of the top 10.
So it doesn't matter who I choose, which you can do it in different orders.
But you've got to think... who do you think you know the most of?
So this is Rotten Tomatoes rating.
I don't think I know the most of any of them.
Okay.
I will go for... I mean, the only ones that I know anything of... It's Connery. Connery, I'll know
You're
more about
Connery.
Than
anyone else. Okay, fine.
So he's got to name one, and I've got to name one, and then we just keep going until we've run out. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you've got 10 to choose from. Obviously, you know that the Bond ones, maybe they're not all going to be in there, but maybe some of them will feature.
Okay, interesting.
We're going to do Connery, and you get to go first as the reigning loser.
Yeah, I still don't quite understand the rules, but just give me...
Okay. So we've got the top 10, Sean Connery, Rotten Tomatoes ratings.
Okay.
Right. Not just any film?
Any Sean Connery. His whole filmography.
I'll just give you a clue. Sir Billy, 0%.
What? Are you sure you're not checking that right? Well, I voted on that.
This is critics' ratings.
Okay.
Films featuring Sean Connery.
Okay.
Yes.
How many rounds of this are we going to do?
We'll do the top 10. You've got to get that top 10.
Right,
so,
okay.
It's like
if you're really dragging
fortunes.
It out, then I'll put an end to it. But I would hope you'd...
Go on.
Okay. So what am I doing?
You're naming
a film
from Sean Connery.
Am I doing the top one or the bottom one?
It's got to be in there.
Highest.
Any.
It's got to be in there.
Any.
Top 10. Okay, right. The Rock.
The Rock. It's not in there.
What? Oh.
It's not in there. That's huge.
I took a gamble on that
You
one.
Did.
I should have just gone for the Bond films.
I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, I've already lost this, haven't I?
The Untouchables.
this is going to take ages, isn't it?
Can you have Bond films? Can we have Bond films?
We'll put that in post.
Okay, can we have Bond films?
Of course you can.
Oh, right, just Dr. No.
Just Dr. No. 95% in at number 5.
Yeah, well, just do the Bond film.
All right, Goldfinger.
You're not playing into this. Yes, number 2. 99%.
Okay. Wow, okay.
From Which We've Love.
Well, I want you to play with a bit of...
We'll just get rid of these first and then we can look at the other films. Because it's going to be boring if we're waiting to do these.
Okay. Russia with Love, 97%.
I don't care what the percent is.
Well, now we're in the rough patch of Bond films.
You've got choices.
You've got Your End of Twice, Thunderball, and Diamonds Are Forever and Never Say Never. So I don't know if they'll make top 10.
Never Say Never's not going to be in there, is it?
Just trying to think what the most highest reviewed Connery films would be. I thought Untouchables would definitely be up there. I thought The Rock would be up there. So maybe I'll go with... Robin Hood's not going to be up there, is it? What about The Hill? I'm going to go with The Hill.
Oh, God.
I really liked your thinking there, and you're thinking along the right lines. It's not in there.
Right, okay.
It's not in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You only have twice.
It's not in there.
Oh, my God.
Right, okay.
So what are we on? 2-1, is it? 2-1, right, okay. It's what about 2-1, yeah. The Anderson tapes?
You're digging a lot from the archives, aren't you? It's not in there, but right. I see what you're thinking.
Okay, okay.
I did Robin and Prince of Thieves.
No. Okay. I thought you'd be better at this.
Robin and Marion.
Is that even in it?
He is.
Oh, Robin, yes, isn't it? Yeah, he is. Oh, that was you. Okay, right.
Exactly, yeah, he's wrong.
Okay, well, we'll do Diamonds Are Forever.
Are you joking? Diamonds Are Forever? That's your answer, seriously?
Yeah.
No,
it's not in there.
Not. No!
This is not as good as darts, mate.
It's your fault.
We've only got one Bond film left. We've only got one Bond film left.
Can I just say, number 10 has 85%. So coming in with your Diamonds Are Forever, that's not going to wash, is it?
I can't do anything. Oh.
The Man Who Would Be King.
The Man Who Would Be
Jesus.
King.
Jesus.
He's pulled it out. It's 97%. It's number 3. Well done. And that means it's 2-2.
Right.
Oh, God. Marnie?
Nice shout, but it's not in there. But
Was it 3-1 there? Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
It's 2-2.
I'm going to have to dig deep here.
Is it?
Yeah, it's 2-2. This is the closest you've ever been.
I know, this is scary.
Yeah.
It's not going to be... I'm just trying to think of Sean Connery films I know for sure. Zardoz? No.
You can't do this.
Yeah, I can. Talk it through, can't I?
You can talk it. There's no rules. You could have done that as well.
Yeah, I suppose you do have to talk it, otherwise you do it in your head. It's a good silence.
You can't do this.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, no.
Not a chance in hell.
I think we have to work together here to get through this. is there any animated movies it's been in?
No, it's going to have a couple of classics that we've not thought about. From the 60s and 70s.
We've done The Hill, we've done the Anderson tapes.
Yeah.
Marnie.
Has he played a spy? He's not really done many spy things. Has he played... No, he's not doing love interests.
Oh, Entrapment.
That's going to be like 30%.
Yeah, it's going to be a low one.
Rising Sun.
No,
he's not going to be the main character. He's not going to be the main character. He's going to be a supporting character.
In Connery movies.
Right. Well, I'll just okay.
Go on.
In at number 10 is a Bond film. Okay, just to give you
the last one. So that's which one haven't we said?
Thunderball.
Yeah, Thunderball.
Correct. Thunderball. 85%.
85%. Interesting.
I know. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Number 9's got 88%, and it's from 1990.
That's going to be before Robin and Prince of Thieves.
So is it that space one that he did?
It's not in space.
No, he's not going to be the main character, is he? Because there's nothing he's done that's
the main character. He is the main character.
What? 1990?
Oh, In the Name of the Rose.
No.
Oh, that's a good shout.
Is it in there, though?
No. If we were doing IMDb, it would have been in there.
Can you give us genre?
Spy action.
Spy action. It's not The Rock.
The other one. It's the other one. Name the other one.
Did he do another? What's the other one he did? It's a spy. Has he got a femme fatale in it?
No.
God, I don't know.
Think Russia.
Oh, Hunt for October.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, that was an obvious one. We should have got that.
Mm.
Well, Wheatley got it. Number 8, 1974, 89%.
1974.
Okay, he's not the main character in it. He's not the main character.
It's ensemble.
Yeah.
Oh, Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, Jesus. Am I okay in that as well?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, 89%. Yeah. Number 7, 1970. So you might have to delve into the Connery episodes here. It got 90%.
What's that stupid one he did where he was with a load of...
Darby McGill.
Darby McGill.
Is that who's...
No, no, because that's 1960s, isn't it? 1970, post-Bond.
Can genre, please?
No.
Western?
No. Drama, I want to say.
Drama.
I'm not going to get that.
No.
The Molly Maguires.
Not a chance I was going to get that. Not a chance I was going to get that.
1981 is in at number 6 with 92%.
1981?
Yeah.
Highlander.
No.
Highlander, no. Highlander 2.
Aimed at kids. I would say.
Oh, Time Bandits.
Yeah.
That's good, yeah. Ensemble.
Yeah. And then finally, number one, 100%.
Sir Billy.
Zero.
Now we're talking.
1959.
Road. Hell.
No, you've
Hell.
You've said it.
What?
Marlon White. No. The Darby McGill. Get out.
Darby McGill and the Little People has 100%.
How many people? Is it just you?
It's just me.
Because nobody else knows what that film is. Wow. Okay, that's blown me away.
Let's do a quick Pierce Brosnan round. Come on. Let's bring this back.
Okay. Come on, let's rest.
This is a bit easy. Bang these out. I've read the list,
haven't
I?
It actually won't be easy. Do you want to do the top five Brosnan?
Top five, yeah.
Top five
yeah.
Brosnan.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll go first.
You go first.
Yeah. GoldenEye.
No.
Oh, come on.
GoldenEye is number 8 with 80%.
Mamma Mia
is not in there, but Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
I love
number
that.
Number 7
that.
With 80%.
I love that.
You're
okay.
not happy
No, we're doing top 5, aren't we?
We're doing top 5, yeah.
Okay.
Top 5. Mrs. Doubtfire.
Wow.
It's not even in the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Are these crap films in the top 5? Are they stupid films?
Okay, so in at number 5...
Are we basing on the fact that not many people have seen these films, but that people who've seen them really liked it?
Well, in at number 5 is a release from 2010.
Oh,
it's 84%.
Right, okay.
2010. Is it The Matador?
No.
It's a spy... Is it a spy one?
I think he plays the Prime Minister.
Oh, Ghostwriter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
God.
The Ghost, or whatever it's called.
Yeah. In at number 4, I've literally never heard of it. It's 2024, 89%.
What's the genre?
Match Day.
What's the genre?
Oh, you're thinking of the West Ham Stadium,
yeah.
Aren't you?
What's the genre?
I'm going to check now for you.
I don't even know, just got him working out. Okay.
What is the genre?
It's Rotten Tomatoes, isn't it?
Yeah, this is Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
It's not the Mermaid one, is it?
It's just a drama.
What's it called?
It's a... The Great Lillian Hall. Heard of that?
No, never heard of it. See, on, move on.
This really...
Rotten Tomatoes scores are skewed, aren't they?
Really, by the fact that there okay, three here we people. Go. We're in the top three.
Right,
you've,
okay.
heard, you've heard of all three of these.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number 3, 2013. It's got 89%.
Some crap where he plays
Do you want the name of the character he plays?
Is it a prince or a king?
Guy Shepherd.
Ah. Good Shepherd.
The World's End.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Number 3. Number 2... 2025 release, 96%.
Black Bag.
Okay.
Oh!
Yeah,
okay.
He's clawed it back, hasn't he? And then number one, 97%. Kind of doesn't count, but I'll let him get away with it. 1980. He plays First Irishman.
Oh, Long Good Friday.
Long Good Friday.
Yeah, I don't know. That's actually, I would associate it with First Irishman. That's a pretty good character role to have. Nice, okay. That was, it seems that all their best films are like not really their films.
Yeah.
Okay, who's next? Lazenby.
No, I think we're done.
We're done here.
Right, okay. Lazenby's top one films.
I mean, Roger Moore, all his Bond films are in the top 10.
Yeah, okay, that's the reason. That's the reason.
In fact, the only, the Wild Geese is number 2, just to give you a flavour of how his list looks.
Yeah.
And a film called Shout at the Devil from 1976.
That's one of the best names for a film I've heard. I think it's
Shout at the Devil, that's Roger Moore.
Yeah.
Shout at the Devil is a great name for a film. Because it could be a comedy.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at Letterboxd as well. Lillian Hall is up there on Letterboxd as well.
That's it.
Never heard of it. So, Broadway actress,
Recommendation then.
So, quiz over for 2025.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our New Year special. This has been a rambling edition of the James Bond Day Z, powered by.
Slip the BBC.
Beers and some festive cheer. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We might come back in 2026. Who knows? First Light, we've talked about, which is something that we can all look forward to. But I hope you've enjoyed these episodes. And if you've enjoyed them, give us a good rating. Our coffee page is still alive. I guess we can wrap it up there. So this has been the James Bond A to Z podcast. You've been listening to Tom Butler, Tom Wheatley, Brendan Duffy. Happy New Year. Enjoy your...
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy you can't say ciao to Happy New Year, can you?
No. Ciao.
What's Italian for Happy New Year?
Buon anno nuovo.
On that note.
Ciao.
Be bold. Enjoy it. know yourself, be strong, go out there and have a great time.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.